And in the U.S., there's a lot of talk about budget cutting to bring down the deficit, but few politicians here are willing to provide specifics, certainly not on the scale of the British plan. David Wessel joins us to talk about what British-style austerity would be like in the U.S. He's economics editor of the Wall Street Journal and also a regular guest on this program. Good morning.
Good morning, Renee.
You know, listening just now, how does the British government's budget-cutting plan compare to what's talked about, even just talked about here in the U.S.?
Well, the British government is actually proposing real cuts. In the United States, we just talk about cuts in general, and nothing in specific or not very much in specific. But the magnitude is interesting here. The International Monetary Fund says the British government is trying to reduce its structural deficit, that's the part that's not caused by a weak economy, by about 1.7% of GDP in a single year. If the U.S. was going to do that, that would be $250 billion of deficit reduction, tax increases, or spending cuts in a single year. Think about it this way. That's what the president has asked this deficit reduction commission that he's appointed to do over 4 years. So this is very big, much bigger than anything that most politicians contemplate in the United States.
Although these numbers are a little hard to follow in a way. I mean, they're quite dizzying in both countries. Let's say American politicians really did tackle cutting the deficit. I mean, what would it look like here in terms of the sorts of things that had to be cut?
Well, if you look at what the British are doing, and apples-to-apples comparisons are difficult since their government is a bigger share of their economy than ours, but the British government is proposing to cut one out of every 12 government jobs. That would mean laying off 180,000 federal workers in the United States if we did that. It would mean cutting defense spending and not just getting out of Afghanistan and Iraq, but to cut major weapons programs. The British government is proposing to squeeze the benefits, the entitlements that middle class and upper class British citizens get. If the United States were going to do that, it would mean raising the retirement age on Social Security. It would mean reopening Medicare to save some money there. It would mean cuts in programs from education to technology in order to squeeze the domestic spending, which accounts for about one-fifth of all government spending in the United States. And frankly, it would mean tax increases, and not just on people over $250,000, as the president proposes, but probably on a much bigger set of people.
Okay, David, tax increase is not also something very popular in this country. Tell us more about what you think would have to be done there to make a difference in the deficit.
The mix of spending cuts and tax increases in Britain is heavily on the spending side. And some people think that if the Republicans in the U.S. had a coherent budget plan, they would be talking about something like the conservatives. Of course, the Republicans here are dead set against any tax increases at all. They want to cut taxes, and they haven't come forward with enough spending cuts to bring the deficit down. We're in a somewhat different political situation than they are, of course. The prime minister proposes and his party pretty much rubber stamps what he does. The president of the United States is going to have to get a consensus before he does anything on the deficit. And there simply is no sign now that he can even get a bunch of Democrats to vote to raise taxes, let alone a Congress which is likely to be more Republican.
Although, could the budget ever be balanced without tax increases?
It would be heroic. It would take, in my opinion, much deeper spending cuts than the American people would accept.
Well, you know, given all of that, I mean, why is the British government able to do so much more to reduce its budget deficit than the U.S.? I mean, you've just said the Americans won't accept the, you know, why do the British and why wouldn't the Americans?
Well, I think that the British government is in a different situation than the U.S. government. We can borrow large amounts of money from the Chinese at very low interest rates. Britain's a much smaller, more vulnerable economy. They've been forced into this because they can't account on borrowing as much money from abroad as we can. And secondly, they have a different view of how the economy works. They think the way to prosperity is belt tightening now and you get benefits later. The U.S. government is much more worried about the fragility of today's economy. They're afraid that such a drastic deficit reduction measure would hurt the economy and it wouldn't bring the benefits in the future.
David, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
David Wessel is economics editor of the Wall Street Journal. You're listening to Morning Edition from NPR News. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montagne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. We haven't exactly gone back to the worst days of the financial crisis, but the housing market is going through one aftershock after another. Federal authorities are asking if banks broke the law when they submitted faulty paperwork in foreclosure cases. And the nation's largest banks face another potential problem. Many investors who put money in mortgage-backed securities are now demanding that the banks take back their bad loans. NPR's Tamara Keith reports.
We all know that during the boom years, banks gave out tons of home loans, then packaged them into securities and sold them to investors. Well, some of those investors are taking a closer look at what they bought and saying, hey, wait a minute.
You didn't state the individual's income correctly. You overstated the value of the house, and I'm not going to keep this mortgage. I'm going to give it back to you.
Dick Beauvais is a banking industry analyst at Rockdale Securities, and what he's talking about is known as a putback.
All these people want to send those loans back to the originator, and the originator is going to fight, you know, not to take them all, and that is where the real issue is.
Beauvais and many on Wall Street seem much more nervous about this investor backlash issue than the so-called robo-signer controversy. In part, that's because these putbacks could add up to real money real fast. Yesterday, a group of investors representing nearly $50 billion in mortgage-backed securities put Bank of America on notice that they intend to recover their losses. The securities were packed with loans from Countrywide, the notorious subprime lender later bought by Bank of America. Kathy Patrick is a partner at Gibbs & Bruns in Houston and is representing the investors.
These are the kinds of securities that go into pension funds, insurance company portfolios. These are supposed to be fully secured and over-collateralized securities with the lowest possible risk of default. That's what they're supposed to be. That's what our clients are entitled to have.
She's not naming her clients, but published reports indicate they include several giants of the investment world, BlackRock, PIMCO, and MetLife, among others. Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan acknowledged the putback issue on a conference call with shareholders yesterday.
We're not going to just put this behind us to make us feel good. We're protecting your money, we're protecting the shareholders' money, and we're going to make sure that we'll pay when due, but not just do a settlement to move that matter behind us.
Figuring out which loans were written properly and which ones might have issues could ultimately require combing through hundreds of thousands of loan files. Moynihan said B of A is prepared to do that.
If you think about people who come back and say, I bought a Vega, but I want it to be a Chevy Vega, but I want it to be a Mercedes with a 12-cylinder, we're not putting up with that. And we will be very ardent to protect the shareholders' interest.
I thought that was curious.
Again, attorney Kathy Patrick.
They told us we were getting a car and they gave us a tricycle.
Up until now, investors have had a hard time getting themselves together to go after the banks. The agreements that created the securities required a large share of the bondholders to agree to any action. Last week, another case against Countrywide was thrown out because not enough were on board. But Patrick says this group of investors more than meets the threshold.
Now that bondholders can see there's a path to obtain relief, this issue is going to continue to gain momentum, I think.
Whether investors will be successful in forcing banks to buy back billions of dollars in bad loans is an open question. But the possibility that they might have to was enough to make Wall Street jittery again. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Washington.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montagne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. We're going to talk this morning about the way two of the world's larger economies are handling an enormous problem, huge government budget deficits.
In a moment, we'll get an update from David Wessel on the budget problems that the next Congress will face. We begin in Britain, where the government is unveiling a huge austerity program.
Prime Minister David Cameron's government is planning to cut public spending by $130 billion over the next 4 years, and given that Britain is a much smaller country than the U.S., that is a lot of money. We're going to talk about this with NPR's Philip Reeves, who's in London. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
What are they going to do?
Well, we're getting some sense of what they're doing from the finance minister, George Osborne, who's been addressing Parliament this morning. He said that this is a day when Britain steps back from the brink and outlined a four-year plan, which he said was unavoidable as Britain has the largest structural deficit in Europe. Just to give a sense of that, he said that this was a sort of a debt super tanker that he was trying to turn around. Debt interest payments are running in this country at $192 million a day. So he said he's going to be reforming the welfare system. He says Britain can't afford that. And squeezing every single penny, he said, out of government administration, central government departments, which are having their admin costs cut by a third.
And when you're talking about cutting admin costs and cutting spending, you're talking about cutting jobs, aren't you?
Yes, you are. And of course, there will be other measures too. But just in that area, Osborne said that the best estimate was 490,000 civil servant jobs that will go over the next 4 years. Some of these, he said, would go through natural wastage. But redundancies are unavoidable, he said, when, quotes, the country has run out of money. Incidentally, the Queen is not going to lose her job, but the government's also cutting her money. She's agreed, Osborne said, to a 14% cut in the total royal household spending, which will be imposed in the years 2012 to 13.
Now, I wanted to listen to this debate, Phil, for a number of reasons, one of them being that although we don't yet have such a debate in the United States, we do have enormous budget deficits in the United States, and we're going to be talking about that a little bit more in a moment. But give us a sense of the debate there in Britain. How are people beginning to react to these enormous cuts?
Well, you know, it's been sort of the only subject of discussion, really, in the last few days in the media. And people here kind of like tough talk on these type of issues. I think there's a puritanical streak in this country which comes out on occasions like this. Where we will really find out what people feel about this is when the impact of these cuts are felt on the streets. The other factor that's everywhere in this debate is a public sense of anger and resentment about the banks. People haven't forgotten that bailing the banks out to the tune of billions of dollars caused, in large part, this crisis in the first place.
Any bit of a surprise that a conservative-led government in Britain, conservatives, would be talking about tax increases along with all these spending cuts?
Yeah, and no surprise there. The government has said that all along.
Well, now, there's also defense cuts here, right, which is a big deal for the United States because Britain is the largest U.S. ally overseas, especially in Afghanistan.
Yes, 42,000 defence jobs are going. More than half of those are civilians, but 7,000 soldiers and 5,000 personnel from the Navy and the Air Force each. And Britain's also going to be delaying its upgrade of the submarine-based nuclear weapons system, that's Trident, and it's putting its Harrier jump jet fleet into retirement. It's going to cut dramatically the number of tanks and heavy artillery. They'll be cut by about 40%. But importantly, Cameron, the Prime Minister, who spoke of this yesterday, says there'll be no cut in support for British troops in Afghanistan.
Okay, Phil, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
That's NPR's Philip Reeves bringing us the latest from London, where the British government has announced drastic spending cuts.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Mortgage lenders now face no fewer than 5 federal investigations into the way they've handled or mishandled foreclosures. Today, representatives from the Treasury and Justice Departments, as well as at least 8 other agencies, gathered to talk strategy. Housing and Urban Development Secretary Sean Donovan told reporters the government will hold banks accountable for the mistakes they've made.
2 major lenders that had suspended foreclosures announced earlier this week that they plan to resume taking back homes as soon as possible. Today, we look at the foreclosure process in 3 different places around the country, starting in Cook County, Illinois. Foreclosures in the Chicago area remain high, despite the push for loan modifications and the controversy over rushed and sloppy paperwork. NPR's Cheryl Corley has the first of our reports.
About 25 people are entering an auction to bid on foreclosed homes in the Chicago metropolitan area.
Good morning. My name is Fred Lappy. I'm an attorney with InterCounty.
Lappy also owns InterCounty Judicial Sales, one of the private firms that handles foreclosure sales for the Cook County courts. This day, there's a low-key bidding war going on over a foreclosed home in Evanston, a northern suburb of Chicago.
167 up front, once, twice.
That house was the only sale of the day. A number of the other sales were canceled. Sometimes homeowners get caught up on payments and pull their home out of the auction. Lappy says other sales are delayed because of the robo-signing controversy that prompted several major banks to recently halt or delay foreclosures.
My guess is while it'll give these homeowners a number of weeks or possibly months more in their home, in the end, the result is quite likely to be the same, that these people will lose their homes.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks so much.
We are in the vicinity of 35th and, 35th and Mozart. 43rd.
That's Steve Patterson, a spokesman for the Cook County Sheriff's Office. He's outlining where deputies are putting up eviction warning notices on the doors of foreclosed homes. Officials here expect foreclosures in the county to total more than 50,000 by year's end. The sheriff, Tom Dart, has more than 1,000 homes on his foreclosure eviction list that belong to the banks that recently froze or delayed foreclosures. Despite the fact that two banks have resumed foreclosure proceedings, Dart is still suspicious. He says he'll refuse to evict anyone unless the banks produce for him an affidavit assuring that their foreclosures filed in Cook County are legal and proper.
This is not the lotto. This isn't something where we're rolling the dice and saying, you know what, possibly this has been done legally. Maybe it hasn't, but in the meantime, you and your children go find some place to live. Plenty of homeless shelters out there. We can't do that.
2 years ago, Dart refused to carry out evictions at homes where renters hadn't been notified their landlord was in default. He now says unless he gets some concrete assurance that lenders handled their foreclosure process properly, his latest eviction moratorium will begin on Monday. Cheryl Corley, NPR News, Chicago.
I'm Tamara Keith. And in Collier County, Florida, the foreclosure freezes announced by some of the nation's biggest banks didn't exactly bring things to a screeching halt. In the first 2 weeks of this month, 122 foreclosed homes were auctioned off on the first floor of the courthouse in Naples.
I don't think they slowed down that much.
Dwight Brock is the clerk of the circuit court in Collier County. Like so much of Florida, this county on the Gulf Coast has been hit hard by foreclosures. The folks in Brock's office process all the legal documents and schedule foreclosure sales once a judge has ruled. Brock says about 60% of the scheduled sales were canceled this month. Sounds like a lot, but that's not much more than the norm.
That's not quite like some of the perception that I've heard in the national media that, these were being stopped. That, I don't think, was the case at all. Not in my jurisdiction.
County records show Bank of America, Chase, and GMAC all moved forward with foreclosure auctions in Collier after announcing they'd halted foreclosures. And since the start of the month, banks have launched foreclosure proceedings against nearly 200 Collier County homeowners.
There's not been an appreciable change in the number of cases that were filed from last month.
So how is this possible? I checked in with spokespeople from B of A, Chase, and GMAC, and they say they've kept their word. It just turns out their pledges to stop foreclosures weren't as wide-reaching as they may have originally seemed. Maria Barbosa, a housing attorney with Legal Aid Services of Collier County, says it was never clear to her which, if any of her clients, would benefit from a temporary moratorium. So she's been telling them all along to assume that nothing has changed.
We certainly don't want to give the client false hope that it may mean that their cases are going to be dismissed.
For his part, Dwight Brock says no one enjoys taking someone's home. But he finds the canceled foreclosure sales annoying. He expects most of those sales will be rescheduled eventually. And Brock says taxpayers will get to foot the bill a second time for the sales to be planned and advertised. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
And I'm Yuki Noguchi. Bank of America's temporary freeze on foreclosures has been lifted in some states, but is still halting some sales in the state of Arizona. Bank of America purchased Countrywide, which had been a big lender in Arizona, which now has the third highest foreclosure rate in the country. And at least until recently, that was spurring home sales. Realtors had been doing swift business, selling distressed homes to enthusiastic buyers like Dean Martin.
I actually own two properties. I just purchased a short sale earlier this month.
Martin is not just any investor. He's also the state's treasurer. And he's not alone in seeking an opportunity in the downturn. One recent study by Arizona State University showed nearly half of existing home sales in September were foreclosures. Still, the state's housing problem, a huge surplus of homes on the market, ranks as Martin's biggest economic concern. Even at last month's rate, he expects it to take 3 to 4 years for Arizona to recover from its housing bust. And the slowdown of foreclosure sales, he says, threatens that momentum.
It's like a snake's trying to swallow a rat and it gets stuck halfway. We're trying to swallow this rat of all the foreclosures, and if we stop halfway, that's going to prevent us from recovering.
Speaking from a Phoenix Realty office, which he happened to be visiting today, Martin says he hopes Bank of America will resume its foreclosure process in Arizona quickly, in weeks, not months. But what concerns him is also timing, namely that the federal and state investigations are all happening on the eve of elections.
When you have 50 elected officials all promising to investigate right before an election, rather than being able to quickly sort this out and get going again, all of the financial institutions immediately go on the legal defensive and drag this out for a year or two, and that will delay a recovery.
Martin himself is not having to make any such campaign promises. The Republican says he plans to retire from public service after this year. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News.